Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Matthew is here. Before we talk purple with Matthew from Purple Insider, we are about to get another press conference involving the killing of Charlie Kirk, but officials just in the last few moments have postponed a news conference due to rapid developments in the case. As soon as we see any of that break, whether right from Utah or elsewhere, we will certainly let you know, even if it's in our conversation here with Mr. Collar. Check out Purple Insider. I'm on it right now. Vikings 1-0 after the win against the Bears. And now they get, well, Kirk Cousins will be on the sidelines, but they won't see him as a starter. Michael Penix and the Falcons coming to town. Another nationally televised game, Sunday night. Matthew, always a pleasure, sir. I'm looking at your story. I looked at it earlier in the day. Vikings superpower is on the sidelines. And, Matthew, I must have watched it four times on various media outlets with individuals contending if they could pick one coach for now and for the future, one head coach for now and the future, the guy they would pick is Kevin O'Connell. Is that hyperbolic?
It's not hyperbolic. I think, of course, there's a guy out in Los Angeles with great style and hair who has won a Super Bowl and beat the tar out of Kevin O'Connell last year that I think I would pick number one overall. I mean, give me McVay as the best coach in the National Football League, and then, you know, Kevin O'Connell's in the conversation. Of course, there's the legends category with, like, Tomlin and Andy Reid and those guys that are, you know, they know how to do the job and they're great. And if you have a Super Bowl, then you're ahead of Kevin O'Connell. But I think if you were drafting all coaches for the next 10 years, that you're picking O'Connell very high. And one of the reasons is exactly what we saw on Monday night. I mean, there are, you know, O'Connell joked yesterday about, you know, I know people want to see me throw a Gatorade cooler or kick over a bench or something. He's like, that's just not what wins football games. And he has this calmness to him in the moment where it's like, all right, you just threw a pick six. How many coaches after their quarterback threw a pick six would bring the quarterback over and say, hey, great job on that protection. You made the right read. You got a bad break. The guy made an unbelievable play. Get back out there. Let's go. How many coaches would say that? How many, and one, how many coaches could I identify in the moment? Because he was actually absolutely right. I mean, I watched the tape back, and I watched what former Viking quarterback JT O'Sullivan had to say about it. It was just like a shockingly good play where that guy completely sold out for only one result, and he got it. But how many coaches would realize that and say that? I mean, I would throw a Gatorade cooler. I saw a few reactions online of people who were not keeping their cool after that. But the fact that they have not only O'Connell, but Aaron Jones, T.J. Hockenson, Justin Jefferson, Brian O'Neill, all these guys who have been through these games. I mean, these guys were part, some of them, of the biggest comeback in NFL history. They've kind of seen it all. And I think that there is a calmness that starts with O'Connell and trickles down to those veterans that makes it a very friendly environment to a quarterback where you never feel like that quarterback thinks that it's kind of him against the world out there. And we really saw the result of that with J.J. McCarthy on Monday.
Are there times where he does light these guys up? Or is it pretty much what we see? It's just who he is on a consistent basis. And in amplifying what you said, that's the superpower. That they're not surprised. They know what they're getting. They know the belief. And they're not waiting for the shoe to drop where all of a sudden he's screaming at them like probably 95% of the other coaches they've had throughout various parts of their career.
I think that behind the scenes in the film session on Tuesday, some paint probably came off the walls. I think that behind closed doors, Kevin O'Connell will push the gas pedal down when guys need to hear the message. Now, these are veteran players, so when they do something wrong, they're usually going to know. But I like the way that he framed it yesterday, where he said, when I asked him what happened in the first half, he said there was a lot of stuff that was not up to their standard. And then when you watch the tape back, they're running routes where two guys run into each other. That's not going to help your quarterback. What the hell is that? Like, that's not something that you ever see from a Justin Jefferson and even a player who's been around like a Jalen Naylor. It was not just the quarterback who was freaking out a little bit in that environment. There were multiple people who were not their usual selves in that first half. And I imagine that the tape session was pretty harsh, because if you keep playing like that, like they did in the first half, then you're not going to win very many football games. But I think it speaks to just the team in general, that they could lock back in and find a way. And it speaks a lot to J.J. McCarthy. And I also think that when we evaluate McCarthy, you could say, oh, he played terrible in those first three quarters, and you'd be right by the numbers. But when you actually go back and watch it, you're like, he didn't make a lot of bad decisions. They actually just played badly. And there is another team on the field that has a pretty good coach named Dennis Allen defensively, who threw stuff at them that they had not been able to prepare for. And I think that threw off the entire team. So they're going to have to play a lot better against Atlanta, but I also think that they learned a lot about themselves by pulling out a win in that game.
What was your read on the number of plays where they had the delay game a couple times, I think. They were down to the clock with a 2-3 on a regular basis. And also, and I thought he improved on this greatly, I just thought there were a number of plays, Matt, in the first half where when he gets to that set position, when especially in the O'Connell offense, you're expecting the ball is out, where I just thought it took him a little bit of time in that area. What about those 2 points in evaluating McCarthy?
So I think we've seen this from all Vikings quarterbacks with O'Connell, that he gives them so many tools at the line of scrimmage that sometimes it's a little much. And even last year, Justin Jefferson went to O'Connell after one of the games where they had 2 or 3 delay of games and just said, can you cool it? Like, can you pull it back a little bit? And my guess is that he had a lot on JJ's shoulders. And in practice, he probably got it all right. And then the F-18 jets flew over and the national anthem played and the ESPN cameras turned on. And it's a little bit scary out there, man. You could say all day long that, oh, well, this guy played in college. That's fantastic. It ain't nothing like this. And I think that was a good experience for him, but I also think, like, that was more J.J. nerves than anything else. And that, I think, will not happen probably again to him. What was the second part of the question?
Just the idea that I thought there were a number of plays in the first half where – when he gets back in that set position, when him to make the decision right there and throw the ball, it just, and maybe that's just unavoidable. It's the kid's first game, as you just said, but I thought that ball came out with some alacrity in the second half, whereas the first half, you're like, okay, you just planted the foot. This is the time you have to make the decision, including when a guy named Christian Darrisaw is not playing in the game.
Yeah, and so I think that that was part of it, is that Justin School was being beaten pretty badly, and that's what we saw in camp, all summer. Was just, I don't think that he is of the ilk of previous quality swing tackles that they've had, like Rashad Hill or even David Questenberry. I think he's a step down from that, which is kind of barely playable. That was a huge problem. I think that sped him up, some of the quick pressures, or at least, you know, maybe cause them to run a little bit faster. I do think that some things, see what happens a lot is something flashes open in like the blink of an eye, and we're sitting at home like, throw it, stupid. Like, what, you know, but, yeah, but then right. When you look, like, when was the, how long was the actual window for him to pull that trigger? And it's, 0.001 seconds. And that, I think, went along with the nerves a little bit. I also think that KOC was trying to ease him in with short stuff. And then with the Naylor play, it was almost like they all went, oh, yeah, that's right. Like, KOC's offense is downfield. This kid's got an arm. Like, let it go. And he said after the game, I asked him if there was a particular throw that kind of got him going. And he said that one at the end of the half. Then he felt like, all right, you know, I can make some throws. But you're right. Like, this is inexperience in the NFL. Like, this is why he's got to play. And it's also why everybody, if you're on the internet during these games, if he has a bad quarter or something, just get away from the keyboard. My gosh. I mean, it's just way too much, you know. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You should have got Rodgers.
No, come on.
There's going to be times like this, folks. That's why they paid so much money for the defense.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So, again, this Matthew Collar from Purple Insider, an absolute must when you're paying attention to the Vikings. I'm on it right now, purpleinsider.football. Check it out. So in the last half hour or so, the Vikings added a wide receiver and a tight end to their active roster and added a cornerback and a linebacker to the practice squad. They have Jeff Okuda, who was one of the starters, a cornerback, like Andrew Van Ginkle in the concussion protocol. They have some options. Now, if all of a sudden they're down Blake Cashman and Van Ginkle, that's a significant loss to that linebacking crew, and clearly Van Ginkle is more than just a linebacker. But I haven't understood the four cornerback situation the entire time. If Okuda's out, are they actually going to play this game with three cornerbacks on Sunday night?
No, they won't. They did sign Fabian Morrow, who's been around and was on the team last year. And it's really unfortunate with Okuda. He got hurt on the last play of the game. It was just a bad break for him. But, you know, they have a veteran on the practice squad, Fabian Morrow. They have Zamaya Vaughn, who they were really high on during training camp, is on the practice squad. But the other thing is that they've got guys with some positional flexibility. So this is more of a three-safety defense than anything else. And Tavier Thomas, who's kind of a special teamer, he played nickel corner for over 1,000 snaps in his career. Josh Metellus has played nickel corner a ton during his career. So I would expect to see the three safeties. And what, you know, could be dependent a little bit is whether Harrison Smith comes back. Oh, I should also mention Jay Ward, who was a fourth-round draft pick from 2 years ago, who played really well in a dime package in that game late in the game at safety. He did a really good job when I was reviewing the game. So, you know, I think that they've got a bunch of safeties in a deep safety room that's probably going to make up a lot of the difference. But it's not ideal because if one of those starters goes down, then you're talking about, you know, Dwight McGluthern, who's an undrafted free agent, or, you know, Fabian Morrow, who you're bumping up from the, you know, from the practice squad. It's not really where you want to be. And I think that what they're trying to do is kind of get through this first part of the season and then see if any options shake loose at corner, because when everyone says, why don't they just sign a corner? You're like, oh yeah, you know, there's a lot of them available on September, you know, whatever. Like, it's not usually how it works. So they might have to wait until the trade market starts to open up a little bit.
Okay. So let's talk about the Falcons. The Michael Penix, Kirk Cousins decision obviously was analyzed most in Atlanta, but probably second most up here because of Kirk. What's your view of Penix right now and the challenges he'll present on Sunday night?
I am a huge fan of Michael Penix. I think the guy is a warrior. I think he's got an incredible arm and a pocket presence that's unlike what you see from most young quarterbacks. I mean, this guy, last week Tampa Bay was throwing it all at him, took zero sacks in the game. He threw two balls that should have been caught at the end of the game by his receivers, and then his kicker missed. I mean, the guy should have had, you know, a game-winning drive there and didn't get it because the team let him down. And I've just been so impressed with his arm talent, his poise as a young quarterback. But this is U.S. Bank Stadium, and inexperienced quarterbacks tend to struggle. Also, a thing to really watch is Drake London. His status is up in the air. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL. Yeah. And that team is not deep with wide receivers. It's kind of him, and then they throw to the running back at tight end a lot. But I'm really interested to see, because I think they're going to try to send a lot of blitzes at Penix early and just see, hey, how are you going to respond? Because this atmosphere is going to be insane. I think this will be one of the loudest opening drives that we've ever seen U.S. Bank Stadium, considering the hype around this team right now. So I'm interested to see it, but I think Penix is going to be a really good quarterback.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Go talk to the coordinators, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Chad. Appreciate it.
Mr. Matthew Collar, Purple Insider, purpleinsider.football. Check it out right now.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.